it's not a secret anymore that Yelich has been hitting really well for the last, you know, maybe month and a half. It's still sort of hidden in his numbers, but it's not going to be hidden on the person who owns him. The thing is that whether the person that owns him is someone who is extremely high on him, or whether it was someone who, you know, was kind of buying into some of the hype at the beginning of the season and now is, you know, just kind of not so sure anymore. If it's the latter, I think there's a good opportunity here to trade for him at what's a slightly lower version of his preseason price. Episode 61 of Flags Fly Forever, the Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing on this super boring Wednesday with no baseball?
This is the precursor to the offseason when you're just kind of like, oh man, like the day after the World Series, like, oh man, what am I going to do with the next 4 or 5 months? And this is the preview of that. And it's awful, and people are tweeting about the ESPYs, and if you listen to this and tweeted about the ESPYs, I'm glad you're listening, but also I hate you.
It's nice to have a day off to kind of reflect on the first half of the season and look at some of the guys who, you know, you're either considering trading or trading for, and to kind of reevaluate things going forward. So it is nice in that aspect, but I'm with Mike. Really boring tonight. The Twitter game is not strong tonight either.
Yeah. I completely forgot that the ESPYs were on tonight until 7 seconds ago, so that's okay. All right, so let's get things started. You can read us at baseballprospectus.com. Find us on Twitter. I'm at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. It's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And George is at George Bissell. That's 2 S's and 2 L's, but only 1 G. Rate and review us on iTunes and other things. Email us, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. We have an abbreviated expert fab section this week because Tout Wars leagues have their pickups on Friday, so they have not happened yet. So because this will be released before Friday, we are not going to ask Mike what he's planning on doing, but instead we are just going to talk about the labor leagues, which had Monday deadlines as usual. So Mike, what happened this week? What should we talk about?
Well, even in labor, there's not much to talk about. I think the week before the All-Star break, it's a weird week. There's, you know, they push the break an additional day, so it's a 3-day week for leagues that allow moves for this week, which many do. So a lot of people hung back. There were two, I don't want to say big bids, but there were two significant bids in labor mix. We weren't involved. We also sat back. We're going to activate Aaron Hicks this week for Denard Span, who went on the DL. We lost Jason Grilly for the year, which kind of stinks, but you know, we were pushing four closers out there for a while. I think it's a kind of a blessing in disguise that we're going to have six starters again, because we weren't exactly losing points in strikeouts and wins, but we could have been in a situation where we did. So that should be okay. So one of the two players who was grabbed with a fairly big bid was Delino DeShields, junior, not senior. He went for $10 to B Sports. And, you know, I think that was okay. You know, he was in a position where he was actually owned earlier this year and was cut by Todd Zola at the end of June, you know, only a couple weeks ago. I think the bid's okay. I feel the way about DeShields I felt about him when he was first picked up, which is certainly going to be a nice source of steals if he plays. Just a very crowded situation. You know, I think we talked about this last week when we talked about the prospects in Texas. Certainly no guarantee to hold a job there all year long, you know, even if you know, injuries and whatnot keep that situation relatively uncrowded for the moment.
Yeah, it's definitely a fluid situation, as they have a lot of guys who could be there, but you know, you can't spit at the steals. It's real value. So, I'll be honest, we weren't really looking to add anyone this week, and I didn't even know he was a free agent. So, sly move by the B Sports team, but yeah, who knows? Maybe he'll end up stealing 15 bases the rest of the way, and maybe he'll, you know, more or less not play at all. You never know.
Yeah, steals is tight enough in labor too, where, you know, even with one player like that, if he does steal even 10 bases, it could be a fairly decent category move.
And the only thing I will say is that DeShields is coming off a hamstring injury, so those tend to linger, and they're very easy to aggravate again. So I'm not sure if, like, he's going to generate a ton of steals going forward, but definitely a guy who can do it. I'd be a little concerned with the type of injury that it is, though.
Yeah, those injuries are always more concerning for steals guys. So that's right. A very good point.
The other guy I think we should briefly talk about in mixed is Jason Mott. He went for 8, also to B Sports. You know, I to kind of tie back to what you're saying about with DeShields, Brett. I think that both these bids are pretty good. It looks to me at the moment, even though Joe Maddon hasn't anointed a closer, and certainly Rafael Soriano could be up in a couple weeks or a few weeks, these are sort of solid bids from where B Sports is with how much fab they had left. And, you know, kind of that idea that we're reaching the point, you know, we're in the middle of July, we're about to get to the later part of July. I think we're past the halfway point of the season in terms of the actual number of games played. This is probably the time where if your team isn't on cruise control or close to it, or if you don't have significant players coming back from injuries, you have to take chances. It's certainly possible that Mott is only closing for a couple weeks. And our partners at BP Wrigleyville, Sadhav Sharma in particular, has kind of warned against Mott as a long-term option, not just because of Soriano, but because of his stuff. If you go over to BP Wrigleyville and, you know, read what he's written over there. But I think that in terms of fantasy, I kind of like the play here. I like the play of, you know, managers have a comfort level with closers. Even Maddon does. We've discussed this before. And as much as Maddon might be tempted to go with the committee or even go with Soriano, I think if Mock continues to pitch the way he has, he could very well be the closer the rest of the way out.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean,
I don't want to oversell it. I mean, I'm not saying Jason Mott's the greatest, you know, reliever in the history of relievers. It's more that he could do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking about Mott, Sadhav actually wrote a really great article about Mott, like maybe 3 weeks ago or so at BP Wrigleyville.
That's the article I was kind of referencing. Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. Yeah, there's not much competition on these bids, though. The one bid that did get a little competition is the CJ Cron bid. You know, the always entertaining CJ Cron bid. I don't really want to talk about Cron because I think it's I don't like him. Yep. I don't like it.
I do want to ask you, Brett, about one guy, Brian Johnson. Mm-hmm. What do you think his realistic sort of upside is here? Because nope. I don't really know.
Nope.
Yeah.
No, the answer is nope. I had this conversation with Ben Carsley maybe in the off season when we were doing the top 10 Red Sox list, and we were talking about, you know, the different ways that people look at Brian Johnson. And my I think it was me who said it to him, but I asked him if Johnson ended up being Joe Saunders, would that be a success for the Red Sox? And he said maybe. And I think that's about what we're looking at.
I've seen him pitch in Pawtucket about 5 times, and I know the minor league numbers are great, but guys with his type of stuff and command, they can do that in AAA. Like, yep. That's easy. So I just don't see how it works in the big leagues, though. I just don't.
I think he's Joe Saunders in a crappy pitcher's park, in a hitter's park.
Yep.
That's what you call a crappy pitcher's park these days.
I'd rather have Robbie Ray at a dollar than Brian Johnson. Ray went for a dollar this week.
I think I would too.
Yep. I'd rather have Sugar Ray.
what Merriman?
Any Sugar Ray? I think you're referencing the band, though, right, Brett?
I don't know what I'm referencing anymore. Something. Not Sugar Ray Merriman. Definitely not.
Got a little bit thrown off by your reference there.
I thought we were working our 80s and 90s pop culture references in.
We could do the pop culture show, but I think Brett wants to move this along tonight.
A little bit. But we should talk a little bit about Aroldis Vizcaíno, just because we... I guess this is news. One of our closers is dead, and he's been Jason Grilley is no longer of this baseball earth. He ruptured his Achilles, and we're down to just three closers. And you know, the talk this week is that Vizcaíno would eventually get into the role once the Braves found a home for Jim Johnson. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on Vizcaíno, because I actually really like him as a dollar stash here for Baseball HQ.
I think, yeah, as a dollar stash, he's okay. It's one of those situations. I get the long term, but I certainly get the potential. It's always difficult to predict what a team's going to do. And the biggest thing to me is, will Johnson get traded? One feeling that I have is I feel like his market is kind of overstated. Some people are like, well, Jim Johnson's definitely going to get traded to a contender. And my reaction to that is, really? Like, you really think that teams are going to kind of line up and go crazy for Johnson? He might get traded. I'm not saying he won't. I just feel that that's being stated in some corners as a certainty. So that's where I'd be cautious. At a buck, Vizcaíno's fine. I also like him because the other guy I've seen floated as a potential closer in waiting is Luis Avilan, who I do not believe in at all. So Vizcaíno's the guy I'd make the backup bet on, particularly if you have Johnson. But all that being said, just don't, if you're in an NL only, don't go crazy and bid a big amount on Vizcaíno this week if he's out there.
Sounds good. So what about the, should we do the AL or the NL?
I was looking at the AL, so we'll start there. And we already talked about Johnson, who went for five to met the Masters ball entry there. So I don't think we need to rehash him. I mean, obviously in AL only, that's a somewhat different proposition. Tyler Saladino was the big buy there. He went for six. I don't have much of an opinion about Saladino. He kind of looks like a placeholder, but on a team that just isn't hitting in an only format, he certainly could return a little bit of value. Just not somebody from a fantasy perspective I have a strong feeling about at all, though.
Yeah, he's essentially the shortstop version of Connor Gillespie.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, and
yeah.
Brett, how excited are you for Jesus Montero?
I'm very excited. I wanted to talk about him.
Sure.
It's about time that he ended up back in Seattle. I think he's earned some playing time, and I'm curious to see how much of it he gets. I think I kind of like that bit in an AL only. Even if he plays, you know, two or three times a week the rest of the season, I think he'll play a little bit more than that. But even if that is the case, then I think I think he'll return enough value to be worth it and worth taking up that roster spot.
I mean the only way he isn't is if Seattle does go out and make a bunch of trades and get aggressive. There was a, you know, kind of a funny rumor today on Twitter that they were going to trade for a catcher. I think it was John Morosi had broke that, but then Ryan Divish, one of the Seattle beat reporters, checked with multiple sources and he was like, yeah, that's, you know, I've heard nothing. You know, it doesn't mean that John's wrong, but I've heard nothing. But if the Mariners do go the aggressive route, he could wind up on the bench. I don't think they should, but they're definitely one of those weird teams in a position where I think to save face, they might be buyers.
Yeah. It's a weird scenario, but Montero so
it's
was
also impossible. It's impossible to predict too. I mean, it's just one of those things where one of the things I always hate about like the trade rumor, you know, or the rumor mill is unless you're talking about like a Morosi or in particular a Ken Rosenthal who talks to people, so many people are just guessing. Like, and I'd certainly put myself in that camp. You know, if you ask me what I think's going to happen with the trade in reality, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Do you follow MLB trade rumors on Instagram?
That's an inside joke if you're not on social media.
It's an insider's inside joke, yes.
It really is.
Well, look it up.
Or
please do.
So, should we move to the National League, or do we want to talk about Drew Pomeranz?
Yeah, we did that really. A couple of weeks ago with Pomeranz. Right?
That's the problem with going from one expert to the other is there's some overlap. So, speaking of overlap, Vizcaino went in the NL for four, which I think, you know, tying back to Brett's point, that's a pretty savvy bid at an NL. That's a good... That's a nice price to get on the ground floor of some potential saves.
Yeah, I mean, especially in especially in Amano, just because I think he could actually be pretty good in NL the rest of the way, even if he doesn't get any saves. So he's one of those guys that could return value anyway, and if he gets saves, it's bonus.
So the big bids were Cole Gillespie, who went for 13 to the Masters ball entry in the NL, and Pedro Strop, who went for 12. And I, you know, the Strop bid is a little bit puzzling just because, you know, I've watched him, I've watched the Cubs, you know, I know the other side of the Grilly coin, which is, you know, he's, and this was kind of the thrust of the Sada article that we talked about, which is, you know, it's, I actually sent a direct message to Sada saying we're talking about your article, and his response was nice. I hope the conclusion was, and this is in quotes, "I have no idea how this is happening in regard to Mott." So that being said, though, it's not like Strop is a better candidate either. So I understand the speculation for saves. I understand in NL only that things are kind of dead. I also get that. You know, we've talked about this before on the show. There may not be a lot of players coming in from the other league. 12 seems a little bit heavy for him, though.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, obviously the rest of the league thought so, too, because that was the only bid on Strop. So, you know, this is not like a tout that we usually discuss where it has Vickery. So, yeah, you had to pay the full freight on the full freight on this. But, the only thing that Strop does really well is his tilt, and you know you don't get points for that. Unfortunately, I wish I was in a league where you did get points for that.
That would be a really cool league.
It would.
Anything about Gillespie or you know he seems. I mean, even for only he kind of seems like a placeholder to me while the Marlins deal with all their injuries. It's fine for a regular. It's just, again, it's similar to, you know, the AL there. And just not a guy who is kind of like Saladino. Not a guy who really excites me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not feeling it.
George, do you have anything to add on what was a very light Fab week? And we didn't even get to talk about Tout. And for that matter, I didn't write an article, which is kind of weird.
It is a little bit. Justin Grimm got a save, so... I would rather have him than Pedro Strop. And I saw Cole Gillespie, it was about a week ago, with when the Marlins came to Boston. And he's a nice player. Like, he's a good major league player, second division kind of guy. You know, the playing time is so important in an NL-only league that it makes him relevant. So I think, yeah, it's a nice pickup, but I think for maybe half of what the Masters ball paid, that's a good pickup, but... Yeah. 13's pushing it a little bit.
Well, you know, the one thing, and Brett kind of raises this point, and I think it's intriguing. It's intriguing to look at labor. And labor's, for all we talk about Vickery and Tout, labor is much more like most leagues or most fab leagues I'm aware of, where you make a bid and you live with your bid. And it's the question of, if you're bidding 13 on Gillespie, you're in a league like labor, you're feeling as well, if I get him for 13, I wanted him, I don't care that nobody else bid.
Right.
And, you know, if you're feeling as well, you know, I'm okay with Gillespie, but if I bid 4 or 6 and somebody else gets him, you know, for 13, I can live with that. And that's really what it comes down to. And, you know, I think the thing about Vickery is Vickery, you know, in theory, is supposed to kind of make you bid at your comfort level. But I think a lot of times, and we've seen this a lot this year, somebody puts in a crazy bid thinking that it's going to get mitigated by Vickery. And what we've seen a lot this year in town, as we discuss this on the show, is that's often what happens. It's very rare that somebody's, you know, insane bid or really high bid has been pushed to very close to the point that it, you know, the maximum of that bid because of Vickery.
Yeah, as far as Gillespie goes, they don't want to play Ichiro every day. So I think the playing time is safe, at least for now, until they decide Marcelo Ozuna's coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to assume he's coming back soon.
I mean, yeah. They don't have anyone else.
I have him in another NL only, and that's just a sad situation. So I guess that concludes our fab segment. So are we going to take a short break, or are we going to plow right into the next topic, Brett?
Yeah, we'll plow right into the next topic. So let's change things up a little bit. George, why don't you introduce the next topic?
So we're at the midpoint of the season, and it's that time where you reevaluate your team and you look for some potential trade targets, try to find guys whose value is on the rise. So that's what we're going to focus on right now. And I'm going to toss it over to Mike first for who you think is a guy who has maybe underperformed to this point in the season, but that you like going forward the rest of the way, that you think would be a good trade target.
Now, are we talking hitters only here, or are we talking anybody?
Sure. We did pitchers about 2 weeks ago with guys' second half value, so we'll stick to hitters.
There's a few guys that I've looked at, and you know, we actually have a piece that by the time you hear this will be out that is focusing on risers, so I'm not going to be redundant and simply talk about who I picked, but rather talk about somebody else. And the article that I have coming out is kind of a look at Pecota and who Pecota and the PFM predicts to rise versus, you know, who they predict to fall off of their first half, second half numbers. And one of the people who jumped out at me that I think will rise is Melky Cabrera. I looked at his overall numbers. I kind of looked at his first half. The proposition for me, and this is actually true of a lot of the White Sox, it's just hard to believe that he can continue to be this bad. I don't think he's a trade target in like standard mix format. You have to be a little bit careful when we talk about this. Like I wouldn't add him in a 12-team league. But in a deeper mix format, and especially in an AL only or a really deep dynasty, if somebody's just kind of giving him away or has given up on him, I see some improvement in those numbers. There's kind of some collapse in the BABIP, and there's also some indications the last couple weeks, you know, just watching him and from what I've seen in the numbers that he's picking it up. He's a very average-driven player, and if the law of averages works out in his favor, I could definitely see him bouncing back in a decent way. I don't want to say a big way, but I could see him bouncing back in a decent way and being a productive player again in the deeper mixed formats.
Like, are there any significant factors that you look at, sort of leading indicators when you're going about picking guys who you think are going to rise over the second half? Are you using Pecota, or what are you looking for when you look for these types of guys like Cabrera?
I don't really use Pecota. You know, the article that I wrote, I kind of almost went backwards, and you know, I looked at where players are ranked year to date with Pecota and where the projections with Pecota rank them, and kind of made observations like, I buy this, I don't buy this, that's why. With hitters, what I really look at is I do look kind of at the BABIP. I look at the kind of the home run fly ball data and the batted ball distance data to see if example, somebody's, you know, really getting cheated even though they're getting some good batted ball distance versus somebody who, you know, is having a problem and just isn't hitting with as much authority. Like a good example the other way is, you know, Ian Desmond. Like I really want to believe in Ian Desmond. You know, we have him in labor, as we've talked about, and I hope he does better. But he's kind of lost some of that batted ball distance, so I'm sort of skeptical that he's going to put up a big power season. Now maybe I'm wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, because we have him. You know, maybe he comes back energized in the second half. But based on the data, based on what I'm looking at, he's not somebody I'd pick for this exercise.
And I'll throw it over to you, Brett. I'm on the verge of making a run here. I'm trying to get into the playoffs. Who's a guy that you're targeting that you think can help improve your team?
Well, but I'm going to take one step back and say it depends what you're looking for categorically. But if you're looking for someone who can kind of help in an all around fashion, the guy who I'm picking in this staff post to target is Christian Yelich. I think it's not a secret anymore that Yelich has been hitting really well for the last, you know, maybe month and a half. It's still sort of hidden in his numbers, but it's not going to be hidden on the person who owns him. The thing is that whether the person that owns him is someone who is extremely high on him, or whether it was someone who, you know, was kind of buying into some of the hype at the beginning of the season and now is, you know, just kind of not so sure anymore. If it's the latter, I think there's a good opportunity here to trade for him at what's a slightly lower version of his preseason price. You know, just for reference, I mean, he's since June 1st, he's hitting .305, .397, .435. He's scored 23 runs. He's got, you know, 3 homers, 4 steals. So he's contributing everywhere. The lineup's going to get Stanton back. It's going to get some bats back behind him. So the run score total should be buoyed a little bit. And the batting average is finally starting to be what we were expecting. His strikeout rate's been going down as the season's going along. And he's finally a little bit healthier. I think the back issues that he had that popped up allowed his ground ball rate to really spike, even though he has a huge ground ball rate anyway. I think his ground ball rate in April was something like 80%, which seems impossible, but actually happened. So he's been healthy. He's been making more contact. He's been making better contact. He, you know, was hitting a lot of line drives in over the last month or so. He's getting into a rhythm, and I think you know, with players to target in the second half, I like targeting younger players, just because I think they have a little bit more gas at the end of the season than older players. Just anecdotally, I haven't done any research to suggest whether that's how true that is, but it feels true just from playing for a while. So any thoughts on him? Am I out on an island on this one?
No, I agree with you. He's hitting right now in the middle of that lineup as well. You got to remember that. So the opportunities to drive in runs are going to be significantly increased than what they were before. D. Gordon's coming back from the thumb injury, which he dislocated, sliding into first. Never do that.
But, never slide into first.
But they're going to get Gordon back. He's hitting in the heart of that order. There are still some good bats there. But there's a lot to like there with Yelich. I mean, he leads the league in ground ball rate right now. I think he's near like 70% still, which is absurd. But
it's completely absurd.
You got to figure that's going to come down a little bit. We've already started to see it with just a ton of line drives. So I like Yelich as well. That's a good call there by you, Brett. Any thoughts, yeah, Mike?
I would just add that, you know, that's a really good point, you know, regarding young players, and I completely agree with that. But even without injury, guys over 30 tend to rest more, tend to get banged up a little bit, you know, it tend to kind of wear down even if they're on the field, or especially if they're on the field. So I kind of look for the same thing if I'm making a trade, or if I'm making pickups in a standard mix, or a guy like Yelich might be available if it's a redraft.
And Brett mentioned it when he was talking about Yelich, but if you go to Baseball Prospectus today, we have a staff post from the entire fantasy team regarding second half surge candidates who fantasy owners should look to go get. So there's a ton of great names on that list. So I would highly advise everyone to go check that out. The guy I wrote about is Jung Ho Gang. This is more for sort of an NL only format, but yeah, if you look at the first half numbers for him, you know, 268, 348, 384, with just four home runs. He hasn't been great. He's posted, it's a Joe Mauer-esque 54% ground ball rate to this point in the season. So expecting a few more fly balls, and his exit velocity on batted balls has been up over the last month significantly. So when you factor all those things in, combined with Josh Harrison missing 2 months, where he's going to get guaranteed plate appearances playing every day at third base, you know, I really like Gong going forward. Since he's been inserted into the everyday lineup, he's hitting 346, 452, 538. So I don't think he's a superstar by any means, but a guy who's shortstop eligible, who's getting everyday at-bats, I think you could go get him on the cheap right now, and it's a move that'll pay off big down the stretch.
Yeah, Kong's been a really, really interesting interesting guy so far.
On and off the field.
Yeah, in every way. He's one of those guys that I was really – he's one of those people that I was really looking forward to seeing what he was going to do this year. And he certainly hasn't disappointed. He got off to a little bit of a hot streak towards the over the first 2 months of the season. I think he was hitting over 300 at that point, and he's been his numbers have sort of come back down to where I think they'll settle to. And you know, this is, I forget whether we talked about it here or whether we talked about it on Tino, but we were discussing sort of the translation from the KBO to Major League Baseball, and you know, with the offensive spike in the KBO, everyone's stats look completely ridiculous heading as he came into the majors, and people were getting a little, I think some people were getting a little overexcited, and then on the other hand, some people were just writing him off, being like, good, you know, there hasn't been a hitter that's come over and succeeded from the KBO. It's not going to happen. Doesn't matter what kind of stats he put up. And you know, the answer, you know, it was a really boring answer, but you know, my answer kept being that it was probably just going to be somewhere in the middle. What I kept saying is that I thought he would be an equivalent hitter to what Jordy Mercer was. And you know, he's been, to his credit, he's been a little bit better than that. I mean, Jordy Mercer last year had 693 OPS, 95 OPS plus. Kong's a 732 OPS, 105 OPS plus. So he's, you know, he's just about a full head above where he was. And you know, I've been a little surprised on the positive side. The approach has been a little bit better than I thought it was going to be. He's been able to draw some walks. He's striking out quite a bit, but you know, that's not unexpected either. But yeah, I like him. I like him more than I thought I was going to. But he's just really fun to watch.
Yeah, we reference all the stats, but sometimes you have to go beyond, you know, just scouting the stat lines and just watching his at bats. For a guy who's never faced major league pitching, I've been really impressed, as you mentioned, with the approach at the plate. So I think he's only going to get better. And Mike, you got anything on Jung Ho Gang, or is there another guy you want to talk about?
No, just really quickly. The thing about him, you know, Korean League has often been kind of compared to Double A in terms of their, maybe like a strong Double A in terms of the competition. And the thing about Gong that has impressed me, and this might sound weird, is his athleticism. It's not that he's extremely athletic, but some of the expectations I had is I thought he'd be kind of this like slow, balky, awkward player. And it's what Brett says, the expectations, you know, we kind of saw this with Yasmani Tomas, like the expectations with him after his poor start in spring training were so low that the fact that Tomas has done anything has kind of like made you think, wow, you know, he actually can play. So that to me is kind of the larger lesson. You often have to look at players individually. You can't just look at where they're coming from or look at an early impression and be like, wow, this guy's going to stink. Or even the other way, like, wow, this guy's going to be super great. So I like him too. And your assessment, George, is dead on. He's not going to light the world on fire. But in NL only, he's fine. And I think even, you know, in a deeper mix, if you have an absolute need for your third middle infield, I think he can kind of fill the slot there.
Absolutely. Anybody else have anyone they want to talk about? Or
I am going, I'm not going to dig too deep into this, but just because a lot of it's been said, and there's actually some really good stuff that's been written on at BP Milwaukee on it. But I'm still buying on Ryan Braun, and I think there is some opportunity there to at least regain some of the regain some, you know, profit. You know, he's been running again, and I think there's always lingering concern about him, but he's been wonderful, and I think he makes for, if you're looking for a larger target, I think he makes for a pretty good one.
I don't have anyone else. I think that kind of covers it for me for now. And, you know, as you said, read the piece today as you're listening to this. It's a very well done piece. And, you know, I edited or looked at just about everybody's, you know, good contribution, and everything there is well written and well stated.
Absolutely. The last guy for me, and I'll just do it really briefly, but Mookie Betts, ever since he fell into the wall in center field against Toronto back in early June, he's come back, and in 113 plate appearances since, he's hit something ridiculous. It's a 350 average, 387 OBP, 681 slugging. The BABIP has come up. I think he's primed for a huge second half. So if you can get him for anything below what you would have expected to pay 3 months ago, do it, because he's looking like he's gonna put it together here in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I wonder about that is I know that, you know, for Braun and for Betts, it's guys that are running, and I have Braun in a league, and I'm surprised at how much he's run this year. Guys that are running and hitting for power are often difficult to kind of slot in as buy low guys. You know, unless you're in a league where somebody's, you know, I think in Braun's case in particular, where somebody's really cynical about the long-term proposition, it's a keeper.
I think the more the point on Braun is that I think people, yeah, and this is sort of a bigger topic, and, you know, we can kind of touch on it now. It might be a better topic for a longer conversation on a different show. But when you get to this point of the year, and we've talked about this, I think, mostly offline, but I think we've touched on the podcast a little bit, is that people are still getting hung up about what they thought of these players in the preseason. And, you know, Ryan Braun is not a player that was considered a first rounder. He generally wasn't considered a second rounder either. I think he went in, about 25th to 30th overall.
Yeah, it's about right. So in a 12-team league, he was like late second, early third. In a 15-team, he was mid-second. You know, it's funny. He was somebody, I don't know if you remember, Brett, you know, he was somebody I was actually pretty high on. I think I had like 14th or 15th overall. Mm-hmm. But that was aggressive on my part. I just remember that because he was on the periphery of our labor first-round discussion. And, you know, he was on the periphery. He certainly wasn't there. But, you know, he's somebody I remember kind of thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely was, but it's that sort of mind frame that that I think you can kind of advantage a little bit with a guy like Braun. I think he's, with a combination of how much he's run and his power, and his power backed by his batted ball velocity data, which has been fantastic. I think he should be valued as a borderline first rounder going forward, and I think there's some opportunity there. I think it's not buying low. It's sort of realizing that he's a little bit better than I think we thought he was, and I think some people might be taking that for granted.
I think that's fair. And, you know, I think some of that is trading culture. I'm in leagues. And again, Brett, this is a better topic for another show. But a lot of the leagues I'm in, particularly the expert leagues, people are really conservative and really hesitant to make a move unless it's to their clear advantage. If you're in a league with a more liberal training culture, you can certainly, you know, get Ron and get an upgrade from somebody where the perception is, you know, to use the parlance of NL only, you know, he's a $20 to $25 player, when the reality in NL only, I think the last update I did, he's on pace to earn 32 because of those steals. So, yeah, I think there's places where there's opportunity to get guys like Braun. You're not going to, you know, you're certainly not going to get him unless you're, you know, as a ripoff kind of guy, unless you're in a really soft league. But a league with a lot of trading, certainly look for those opportunities to, you know, even incrementally make gains where you can.
Yeah, it's definitely about incremental gains, and that's, you know, that's sort of the, you're not going to get, yeah, you're not going to get a situation where you're going to get one of these guys because someone's just giving them away. That's and if you are, you should play in a different league. But good. Yeah, it's as we approach the deadline, it's going to be quite interesting, because there's a lot of trading activity that is worth discussing, and lots of trading tendencies. And I think maybe next week we'll get into a deeper dive on sort of the ways to examine deadline deals and really thinking about it from more of a 30,000-foot point of view. But for now, why don't we take a quick break and come back and wrap us up? And thank you for listening to episode 61 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. You have been listening to myself, Brett Sayer. Mike has been played by Mike Gianella, and George has been played by George Bissell. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a premium membership. Come read all our stuff. It's really good. I'm totally not biased. Sign up for a super premium membership and get access to all of our ebooks and the Bat Signal, our fantasy answering service, where we will answer any questions that you have, generally within about 12 hours. It's really fun. We all love it. You should play with us on DraftKings. We have a BP Daily game. You can find out about it by clicking on the homepage at BP, or by following any of us on Twitter, because we talk about it quite a bit. And that is all. We will see you next week. Don't forget to rate and review us. We like those. They're fun. We like to read them. We'll be back when there's more real baseball. Until then, enjoy. Good night.
See you in the future.
Bye, Fawcett. Every time.